Greetings, Trouble listeners. Welcome back to the Trouble Men Podcast. I am Renee Komen, sitting once again in Snake and Jake's Christmas Club Lounge in the heart of the Klempire with my co-host, the original troubled man for troubled times and future mayor of New Orleans, Mr. Manny Chevrolet. Welcome, Manny.
Hey, what's happening, man? Yeah. The qualifying started today for mayor.
I heard about that.
Yeah, and seven people have already qualified. You know what was weird, though? I sent out a press release to all the four network affiliates here in town, ABC, NBC, Fox, and CBS, announcing that I was going to run.
Okay.
And none of them announced it.
Huh. Really?
Yeah, none of them put it on the news or anything like that. So I don't know what that's about.
I was looking for it today. They had this other guy. They had like eight people lined up. There's
right,
a new guy, Scurlock.
Who
is that?
He. Don't you remember him, Ronald?
That name is familiar, but I couldn't place it.
About 8 years ago, he announced that he was running for mayor on this whole business. He's all about business.
Okay.
And then about 3 months into the campaign, for some reason, now I can't remember the exact story, but for some reason he was in Los Angeles staying in a... Do you remember this?
It's starting to come back to me. Go on.
he was in Los Angeles apparently on business.
Monkey business.
Yeah. And he was staying in a hotel in Santa Monica. But he caught a cab ride or an Uber
from the Sunset
Strip.
Yes.
Back to his hotel.
Right.
And I can't remember the exact details. I probably have to Google it or something like that. But something happened where he dropped out of the race.
Yeah. I do recall
there
was
that?
Some funny business in the back seat. I'm not sure exactly what it was. I wasn't there, so, you know, I can't say for
certain. Something happened. His name was... Ronald Scurlock?
That sounds right.
Frank? Yeah. Frank Scurlock?
Yeah, I think...
He's all about business, okay. He says. Not politics, business.
Funny business.
Yeah. But that's his slogan and stuff like that. But yeah, he's... Because when I heard that he was running again and I saw his little advertisement, I said, well, wait a minute. There's something I remember about this guy. And it was something where he was in L.A., I don't know what for, business, and then he got into something about being in the back seat of a cab or an Uber.
Right.
And he didn't pay the driver or something like that.
I don't know. I thought it was something a little bit dicier than that, perhaps.
Yeah, and he blamed it on medication or something.
Well, sure.
I don't know. But, yeah, he's running again.
Okay, well, that's...
So good for him.
So are you going to qualify? Are you gonna go ahead and run?
Yeah, I can't qualify. Qualifying started today. It ends on Friday. But I couldn't get today or tomorrow off. But I got Friday off. So I'm going to go down on Friday.
Sneak in at the last minute, right under the wire.
Last minute. But I was very kind of like perplexed why, you know, all these other people, candidates, have said they've announced we're running, but they hadn't qualified.
Right.
So I put the announcement out there that I'm running, but no one put it on the news. So maybe they just don't like me.
Maybe they're waiting to see you actually qualify
pull the trigger. I don't know. You know,
I mean, if they're going to let this Frank Scurlock guy get on there.
Yeah, and there's
another
guy who I'd never heard of who qualified today. His name is Frank Twiggy.
No.
Frank.
Ricky Twiggs.
Oh, Ricky Twiggs.
We talked about him last time. I'm not certain that he's a real person until I see him. Because
you think he's AI?
Everything about him seems like AI. Yeah. But
how can you qualify with, you know, you have to be there in person.
Well, yeah,
to
I'm saying until I see him, I'm suspending judgment until
he
I see him in person.
He looks like Hitler Youth, if you ask me.
Well, he's got that high and tight haircut, but he doesn't look particularly menacing to me. He looks
he looks
a little soft.
He's trying to get laid or something.
I don't know.
He's never been laid.
I'm not sure.
On the ballot will get him laid or something like that.
Could be. So he's a consultant. He has some kind of consulting business. Several consulting businesses. A lot of these people, they want to run just to promote themselves.
Well, yeah, maybe he's going to help Scurlock, you know, consult Scurlock.
Maybe so. But it'll be a good field for you to run with, I think.
I hope so.
Now, I'm glad. I mean, the last time he ran, the pandemic was still happening. A lot of those forums were Zoom.
Yeah, it wasn't exciting.
It wasn't any good. Yeah, yeah, you know. Now, hopefully, they'll have, you know, full panel kind of debates.
Well, we'll see. But the thing is, we'll see who gets invited.
Okay.
Because, you know, it's all about how much money you raise. That's these forums that go, well, he raised $2 million. We need to have him on this forum.
Uh-huh.
He raised $8. We don't need him. You know, that kind of stuff. So we'll see what happens. But the press can't ignore you. You know, that's the thing about this. The print media has to give you your fair share.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is, here's the one thing that I, you know, since I'm a staff of basically one or two people, I don't really have a staff, is that once I qualify on Friday, I'm going to be inundated with emails and phone calls and mail about how I stand on this, how I stand on this, do you want this, do you want this, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it's really hard at times to deal with it. You can only... Because I work for a living, so it's very hard for me to say I can't be there at 10 a.m. on a Tuesday to talk about this because I've got to be at work. Mm-hmm. So I have to select and choose. So there's many organizations which are very good organizations that are trying to help the homeless, the housing, you know, the addicted, and I just can't give my time to them. I'll basically make a statement saying, whatever you want. Right. I'll try.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. But we'll see what happens. Right now, there's 8 candidates who've qualified, and we'll see what happens between today and Friday.
All right. Well, that's exciting. You know, you've been keeping us on pins and needles, waiting to see which way you're gonna come out.
Yeah. Well,
on this.
I do. I'm gonna say this probably right now to you, Renee. Mm-hmm. This will probably be my last rodeo.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think in 4 years from now, if I'm elected, then maybe.
Okay, you'll run again.
You'll run again because that's when you make the money.
Well, you the second term. Yeah, right.
That's when you make the money. That second term. First term, you got to be honest and all that bullshit, you know. But if I win, you know, that second term,
all bets are
man,
off.
I'm buying. Okay. Basically, that's what it is.
Well, you give, and you give, and you give, and you give, and at some point, you know, you can't be a one way street.
Well,
you know?
At some point, you got to give up too.
Sure.
You know. Anyway, that's my thing for Lent, right? Remember?
Right. Yeah. You know, many people give up drinking, give up smoking, and you.
I just give up.
Just give up.
Yeah. But anyway, what else is going on?
So last week we were talking about when we were recording the podcast, the Diddy verdict was in, but they hadn't announced what it was yet.
Yeah, I know.
So the next day they announced, the RICO charge was found not guilty.
Right.
The two sex trafficking, charges were he was found not guilty, but he was found guilty on two violations of the Mann Act. That's a real old style law there.
I always like
the Mann Act. Yeah, the Mann Act is crossing a state line for the purpose of prostitution.
Oh.
So I think the Mann Act might go back to like the 20s or something, right. 20s or 30s. But it's a felony. And I saw somebody speaking on television, local television the next day, a former federal prosecutor. And he was saying, well, with all the, you know, the guidelines plus all the enhancing aspects of this particular case indicated that could be like a 5-year sentence for either one of those. So, you know, he could potentially be getting like, you know, 10 years. Now, he probably won't stack them up.
He'll
like
probably
that.
Probably get
you know?
4 with good behavior
but,
and all.
Man, I wouldn't want to spend 4 weeks in a federal penitentiary of any type. So
yeah,
it's
but
no
he'll make somebody his bitch.
Well, we'll see who's zooming who.
Maybe he'll hang out with Shuggy. Or Shug.
Okay.
If he's still alive. Is Shug
still alive? Yeah.
He runs LAPD or OP, whatever they call that prison down there. Or is he somewhere in Northern California? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, Diddy, he seemed like a good guy at the beginning, you know.
I thought.
But then I thought, this guy's a jerk because I remember when he first hit it big, his big hit was basically sampling the Police song.
Right.
Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And everyone thought he was a genius. It's like, well, fuck, man. You didn't write any of this music.
Right. Yeah, well,
it's just like, Weird Al Yankovic. You know, he just takes the same music and just changes the lyrics.
Right.
Well, you know? I had this music business attorney who at one time was also Biggie's attorney some aspect of his career, and she was saying that by the time they put those records out, all the publishing was gone. All the publishing was gone on samples, you know. So all they made was like actual, you know, record sales.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
because the you know they now, whereas like Dr. Dre. Those guys out there on Death Row, they would say, oh, that's a cool song. I like that track. They go, bass player, can you play that line right there? Drummer, can you play that beat right there? So they just recut all those things that they, instead of doing a sample, they just make their own shit, man. Sample that.
Smart guy.
Yeah.
Ice-T, smart guy, too.
Okay. Yeah. He's had a tremendous acting career.
Yeah. And Ice Cube.
Yes, he as well. Written a whole bunch of very successful movies.
Yeah.
Ice Cube. Yeah,
he seems like a good guy, too.
I don't know. We'll see.
I don't know.
So what else? What else is going on?
Well, I heard today, just today, because I've been kind of busy, and I haven't really watched the news much, but I heard today that Mattel Toys
have
announced
that
they're going to make a Barbie doll that has diabetes.
Right.
Huh.
Okay. And they're going to have all the stuff that a diabetic needs.
It has an arm sensor thing on one arm, and then an insulin pump on the other arm.
Yeah, and the kids are excited about it.
Right.
You know, especially, you know, I guess kids with diabetes. I don't know. But at the same time, you know, Mattel, they're hip with society. You know, ever since that movie came out and all that, I never saw it, but you saw it, right?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Yeah, you enjoyed it.
It was not my favorite. Yeah, but I didn't enjoy that. I just did that because I felt obligated, but it was not my favorite
but
movie.
But Mattel now is coming with Popcorn crack whore Barbie.
Right.
Crack whore Barbie because they want to be in with society.
Sure.
Be in with the people, the real people. And I'm sure I would buy that crack whore Barbie doll.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, you know, I had kind of the same notes written, except mine was that, you know, another one. So they're coming out with several models. They also are coming out with the junkie Barbie.
Yeah.
Which with including track marks and rotten teeth.
Oh.
So it's a whole new branch that they're coming up with.
They're also coming out with gonorrhea Barbie.
Embracing the darkness, Barbie. I like this.
Well, I might have to start collecting Barbies if the
Ken is a pimp.
There you go. Makes sense.
Yes.
Ken is a pimp who basically gives her sugar pills and say, "It's all right, baby. This will cure it all."
Don't make me bring my goon hand down on you.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Poor Barbie. She gets around.
Yeah. Well, you know. It's at this point.
Yeah, she gets around.
That's funny. We have the same joke.
Well, great minds think alike, right? Yeah.
Oh.
Anyway, also, I don't have much notes. I'm just kind of improvising. You know, I'm winging it, as they say, as always. But I heard today, or was it yesterday, that our fearless leader signed a thing where I don't understand this, but every newborn baby in America is going to get $1,000.
Huh, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, it's some kind of thing where every baby born in America after today, because he signed it today or whatever, will get a Trump account where it's going to be $1,000 in this baby's name.
Oh, jeez.
So I don't understand it whatsoever. It sounds like Boys from Brazil, if you ask me.
Right. Free money for everybody, you know.
Yeah.
It's like on a related subject, the big beautiful bill that passed this week is going to kill my medical insurance.
Oh no!
So I finally got in a medical insurance situation that's actually affordable. You know, I've been paying through the nose for fucking 30 years. It's ridiculous. Now my kids are adults, and just me and my wife, and we had it all sewn up 1 year. And then now it'll end at the end of this year.
It's already happened, or is it going to happen?
I think the bill.
You
passed.
Should talk to RFK Jr. Well, he'll help you out.
Sure. Speaking of junkies, and rotten teeth. I think it will end at the end of this year. My current situation. I'll have to go back out there and hustle my ass on the street for some medical coverage.
So he's killing Obamacare, is what he's doing.
Yes, all the subsidies, the market subsidies, all that stuff is.
You should have another kid and get $1,000.
You know. Yeah, I'll have to talk to my wife about that.
Yeah,
big problems require big solutions.
There you go.
But yeah, I don't understand the game plan of this. Is this just like him saying to all those white trash people that voted for him that I'm giving you $1,000 if you have another kid?
Right. Well, I would just guessing that it's something to distract away from all this negative stuff that they just did that people are going to. And now I saw somewhere where a lot of the most negative things, I don't think the ACA destruction that I'm going to, Affordable Care Act for all you people that don't read much, Obamacare as they call it, that's going to go into effect right away. But a lot of the things like the Medicare cuts and stuff, they delayed them until after the 2026 midterm elections. They don't kick in until then. It's passed now, but these things are on a... So
pass the buck after the midterms.
Right. So, oh, man.
Yeah, well, hopefully by then, you know, some of those constituents of all those Republicans will realize, you know, you fucked me.
No, well, they won't realize it until after the midterm, and they're getting that $1,000 a kid, you know? I don't know.
We have two kids by the midterm.
We do apparently have a birth deficit in this country, they say.
Good.
You know, now at the same time, we're putting all these people out who were occupying our country and doing a lot of work. So, I don't know. Do you want more people? Do you not want more people? I don't know. You know, you're like mixed working cross purposes here. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all going to hell. Yeah. That's why we got to elect me.
Yes, yes.
You know, because I'm the only one who has truth.
Okay.
And I speak the truth, especially when I'm drunk. And I'm one drink away from that.
Nice. Yeah.
All right. So anything else?
We could, but why don't we get on to our guest. Yeah, I have plenty of stuff, but let's move get to our guest.
Cuz he's exciting to me.
Yes, yes.
And he's in shorts.
It's hot outside.
Yeah.
No,
Manny and I wear long pants no matter what
I try.
I'm in a jacket cuz I'm cold, man.
Okay, well, he's a terrific guitar player, songwriter, singer with his own band, The Breton Sound. Also plays in the terrific band The Walrus, a New Orleans Beatles experience. Also has the band Big in the 90s. He's a former guitarist with Cowboy Mouth and also the host of his own very successful podcast, Ranking the Beatles. He's been doing that for a number of years. Unlike many people we know who start a podcast and they have a podcast and you go look it up and they have four episodes and the last one was done 3 years ago.
Right.
Unlike that, he actually has more than an idea for a podcast. He produces podcasts. And we're going to get into all that and much more. But without further ado, the great Mr. Jonathan Priedus. Welcome,
hey guys.
Jonathan.
Thank you. Happy to be
Priedus,
here.
Priedus, what kind of name is Priedus?
White. I think it's Spanish and German.
Okay.
Yeah, I think leans more Spanish, though.
Priedus.
Yeah, Spain.
All right. And you're from here?
Yeah, born and raised here.
What neighborhood?
Grew up in, I guess, what is considered Lake Vista? Or is it Lake Terrace? I don't know.
Okay.
Basically, you know where the Greek church is on what's now Allen Toussaint and St. Bernard?
Yeah.
No.
Right there. There.
Yeah,
by
the
St.
Hellenistic
John.
Culture Center. Yeah, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Where they have the Greek festival?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I grew up a block away
from
there.
It's one of the worst festivals I've ever
been to. It's so hot.
It's so fucking hot.
It is
miserable.
It is hot. Yeah.
It's unorganized.
There's lines for everything.
Yeah, and it's not worth it.
Yeah.
I went there once, and I was like 8 minutes in. I'm like, I paid for this?
Right.
You know, and I wanted to break a dish, and no one let me.
When I was growing up there, they would give us free passes because everybody would park in front of our house. So they gave all the neighbors passes. And when I was 18, I went and I had a fake ID and I got, they had this blue daiquiri and it was an ouzo daiquiri. Oh. I didn't know what ouzo tasted like and I learned that day I don't like ouzo.
Yeah.
It was pretty gross. Yeah.
You know, when I was a kid, I used to, my father and I played at this place too, the Lake Vista Community Center.
Yeah.
Yeah, we used to carry the B3 organ up those stairs. It was before they had an elevator there.
Yeah.
Now I early vote.
That's
where
I early
place.
Vote. Yeah. That's the place.
Yeah, I always have to tell the story every time. Nobody wants to hear it. Yeah. Nobody wants to hear about me talking about playing for Parents Without Partners.
Oh, man.
In the 70s there. So you grew up in the lakefront, you went to Newman School?
Correct, yeah.
And you went to Newman from the whole time?
Second grade on, I went to Gainis for...
Gainis? What
Gainis that? Was the name of the school. Clifton L. Gainis School. It was on Paris Avenue, where your daughter lives.
Right,
just a couple blocks off of what is now Allen Toussaint. And it was, I think it got destroyed in Katrina and they didn't reopen
it. Now, who is Alan Toussaint? I don't know who that person is.
He worked with Paul McCartney.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. A couple people like that. Yeah.
Now, who is Paul McCartney?
He's one of the Rolling Stones.
Oh, I like the Stones. Yeah.
They're out with Oasis right now on a big UK tour.
I love Oasis.
Do you?
Man. Oh, I love Oasis. Fabulous.
Okay, we're getting ahead
of
ourselves.
Did a lot of heroin during Oasis. Yeah.
You did.
They did too, I think.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And they seem like good guys. They like each other and stuff like that.
Well, it's a good family environment.
A little bit of friction. Yeah. But,
they remind me of the Kinks.
Yes.
Yeah, very much. And I'm not a big Kinks fan,
I like the Kinks.
Yeah, they're all right.
Yeah. They had a good singles catalog.
Ray Scabies was in the Kinks. He was in the Kinks, right?
Great records, too. Record cuts. Well, so Newman, for all that time, your family must have had some dough, huh? Your dad robbed a bank or something?
No. I've often wondered how I ended up there, because we were just a pretty standard middle class family, and at one point there were three of us there, and I know we were getting financial aid.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how they afforded it. My dad was notoriously cheap.
Okay.
That's probably part of it.
That's why.
One day I was going to this school, Gainis, and then the next after that summer I was going to Newman.
Now, Gene Gordon, wasn't that over there in that same district over?
No, Gene Gordon was a couple blocks over, I think, from where Gainis was.
That's where my wife went to school. She grew up right there off of, at the time, Robert E. Lee was the street.
Yeah.
You keep avoiding that name at the time.
Au Courant.
Now Alan Toussaint. Well, yeah, I think you're the second guest that we've had on the show that went for almost his entire school career to Newman.
Who was the other?
So it's Charlie Kohlmeier.
Okay.
Drummer, Charlie Kohlmeier. And I said, well, Charlie, your family must have had some dough. And he goes, yeah, they did, but I'm also a Newman.
Oh, yeah.
That's the other side
you get
of my
the family.
Family
discount.
Yeah. He said, when they have Founders Day, I have to show up. It's like, all right, well, that makes sense.
I went back there for the first time in 25 years, like a month ago.
To spit on them?
I did not go to spit. I thought about it. Okay. But no, a woman that my wife works with, her son was graduating, and we got invited to go. And it was weird because, like, it was in the gymnasium, and nothing had changed in 25 years. And even when I was there in the 90s, it looked like it hadn't been updated in 25, 30 years. So it was just like walking into a time machine. It was very strange.
Right.
It's weird to go back.
Well, that's how, don't you find most of New Orleans is that way?
Pretty much.
I was driving some people around from out of town today, and I was saying, oh, this happened there, and this happened there, and like, wow, so you know this neighborhood, huh? And I was like, the whole town is like this for me. I can't drive down a street without memories on every fucking corner, you know? It's good and bad, but mostly good. They're mostly positive memories. So that time and when you're there at Newman, are you involved in the band program? Are you already playing music of some fashion?
A little bit of both. I started playing percussion. I don't know, like fourth grade band, as a child. I wanted to play saxophone for some reason.
My first instrument
was it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was because I grew up loving the Blues Brothers, and I was like, oh, Lou Marini, that guy was cool. I'll play saxophone.
Okay.
And after the first week, I was gently told to go over here with the drummers and do something else.
Who told you that?
The band director.
What's his name? We'll fucking find him.
I don't even know if he's alive anymore. Michael Gooma was his name.
Oh, Mike Gooma. I know Mike Gooma.
Is he alive?
I don't know. I haven't seen him in...
I don't think Mike is still alive.
In a long time?
I don't know.
Yeah. Fuck that guy.
Oh, no. Mike's a good guy.
Killed my saxophone dreams.
Yeah, it killed your dreams, man.
But I will say, you know, so I moved to percussion and became a drummer and ended up playing drums in bands in, you know, my high school years, but picked up guitar along the way. My uncle was a musician. My grandmother was a singer. So I kind of got it from them. And
they were Prietuses?
No, on my mom's side. My uncle was Tommy McIntosh, who was a trombone player.
Okay.
He worked a lot in New Orleans in the 70s and early 80s, I think.
Now, how many of them were dope fiends?
Just him, as far as I know.
Yeah.
From the stories I've heard, he used to be known as the Groove, and he would make his own hallucinogenics.
Oh.
You could go to his apartment, and he'd have water bottles that were filled with liquid and highlighters that were all black light responsive, and he'd have like tape loops.
Now,
going.
Where is this apartment today?
I have no idea.
Because we didn't go there after the show.
No, I think he's in Destrehan now.
Oh.
Yeah, I think he's calmed down the groove ways, as I understand.
All right. Well, that's a shame.
Yeah.
Well, so you're playing drums in high school. You're starting to play in bands there when you're still in high school?
Yeah, I joined my first band in, I don't know, 10th grade, something like that. And we played at, like, you know, school fundraiser functions at
the
Rock and Bowl
this?
And stuff. It's 10th grade, that would be 97 or 98.
Oh, God, you're young.
Yeah, I'm 43.
So
yeah.
What bands are influencing you besides New Orleans crap?
Besides New Orleans crap, you know, like your Weezer, Oasis was one.
Okay, all right, cool.
You know, a lot of the stuff that you hear on like 106.7 at the time was the kind of rock station. But also, like, I grew up really hard, like, as a Beatles nerd from like 10 on. That's always kind of been like the thing for me was that. And like 94.3, like Tix FM.
Oh, so, I love Tix.
Yeah, so like listening to like oldies radio was always my thing.
Yeah.
Now, how did the Beatles thing start? Last week we get into these, not intentionally, but we had Joe Adranya
last week,
who I know was a guest on your Beatles podcast before. But he's, you know, comes from that same place.
Yeah.
So what did it for you with as far as the Beatles? What really, you know, lit you up?
Yeah, it was a weird thing. You know, I was sitting in a waiting room of an orthodontist's office with my mom waiting on my sister to get her braces tightened once. And the song I Should Have Known Better came on the speakers. And something about it just struck something in me. And I asked my mom, "What is that?" Huh. And she said, "That's the Beatles." And it was the best thing I'd ever heard. So we went home and she said, "Well, I have a Beatles album. We can pull it out." And she had Abbey Road, which was totally different than what I just heard.
Right.
So then my aunt had a couple early Beatles albums. So I didn't understand that, you know, bands had eras and, you know, existed for time periods and changed as humans and musicians. So it just was like I was just in from the moment I found that and just kind of dove in. And I could go to the library and check out records or, you know, cassettes.
Yeah.
I could go to there was a video store
but
on Harrison Avenue.
You didn't
have
any older siblings that handed stuff down to you?
I have an older sister who's like 2 years older than me. And
but she didn't catch the Beatles the first time around. No.
She didn't. And she was more into like electronic stuff in the 90s growing up. She's more into kind of like darker electronic stuff.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Where is she today?
She's here. She's out in River Ridge. She's an attorney. She's married with two kids and she's doing good.
She's dosing.
Yeah. Microdosing to get through the day, probably.
all of your family has stayed in New Orleans?
No. My mom, so my parents split 15, 18 years ago, something
good.
Like that. Right?
Yeah.
And my mom moved to Florida. My dad stayed here. He just passed away in October. Thank you. My sister's here. My brother, I have a younger brother who's 8 years younger, and he lives in Algiers.
Okay.
Yeah. He's also a musician. So he and I are kind of cut from that same cloth.
Right on.
Yeah.
So was it like the excitement of the sound of the Beatles? I mean, because when I asked my father, you know, who's born in 1940 and came up playing in bands, New Orleans rhythm and blues and rock and roll and stuff, you know. And he said, when we first heard the Beatles, he said, they sounded so primitive to us.
Yeah.
He said, you know, the music that we were playing and recording in New Orleans was far more sophisticated the approach, the musicality, the groove and stuff. He said,
but weren't they just doing black American music?
Well, they were,
basically.
But yeah. But
so how was that primitive?
Well, just the way they sounded, the sound of them playing the instruments, the sound coming off the records. He said, you know,
because it was white people doing it, right?
I don't know why.
I think it's the way it's recorded. You know, like the engineers wore lab coats and they were so scientific.
Yeah, like where, George like,
stuff
Martin,
here was just
yeah.
like put a mic in the room and fucking play.
Right.
Like, let it sound the way it sounds, and that's what jumps out the speakers on that kind of stuff.
You. Yeah.
But
who was their producer? George Martin.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But is he still around?
No, he died.
Let's get him on the show.
He lived a long time.
Yeah. No, I think what caught me for it was, you know, I think the records were exciting because, you know, like you were saying about the stuff here, like you grew up listening to all this amazing stuff that's recorded and written here and done here. And this was just something that was very different. And then when the visual was added to it, it just was like, these are the coolest looking dudes I've ever seen. Because I remember I would go to, there was a video rental store on Harrison Avenue. Mm-hmm. Kind of by Parlays.
Right.
And they had VHS copies of all the Beatles movies. So I could go rent A Hard Day's Night and Help and then Magical Mystery Tour and just be like, these are the coolest looking dudes. Oh, my, I want to be like these guys. And that just kind of sucked you in. And then you start realizing how different all the records are and how good they are. And as somebody who wants to play music, you start thinking, well, how can I learn how to do that? And learning how to try to figure out a guitar lick or a drum beat, and then just kind of grows from there.
Right. Yeah. You know, I heard someone, like a musicologist, talking about high-quality melodies and comparing Lennon and McCartney to certain classical composers who are very well-known, certain of their melodies are, you know, universally known. And he was making the point that, in his opinion, the Beatles had a much higher success rate than almost anyone else, any other, you know, excepting a few composers.
Big ones, yeah.
But so many of people who are very well known of the classical era said they wrote a lot of stuff. Most of it was not as good as what you know, as opposed to the Beatles who, you know, it's like most of the stuff that they put out is very high quality. The melodies are all great. They're very memorable, you know. Mm-hmm. They've stood up with time.
And the more you study it, the more you find like really complicated intricacies to them, like counter melodies and counter rhythms that you don't encounter for 20 years. You don't catch it.
Right.
And then one day you're like, oh, he's doing this weird left-hand thing on the piano I've never noticed before. That's really cool. Or,
well, I heard an interview with McCartney, you know, years ago when they, you know, it seemed like since the early 80s to the late 90s, there was always a Beatles documentary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ABC had one and all that. And I remember an interview with McCartney where he said that when he met Lennon and they got to start writing, they wanted to write show tunes.
Mm.
That was their dream.
Yeah.
They didn't want to be in a skiffle band or a rock band.
Yeah.
They wanted to write Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Yeah, that was
you know
the only like duos that you knew that they knew.
Too bad they didn't.
Right?
You know,
I mean, they recorded
got
a couple
stuck
show
with
tunes.
Their music.
Yeah, they ended up with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Yeah.
Right.
Abbey Road.
Yeah, they seem like good guys.
Everybody does what they can. Well, let's
get that Lennon guy on the show.
Yeah. We've talked about him before.
Well, Julian. Julian.
Him or Sean. Yeah.
Him and Sean. They're good kids. We should get them on the show.
We could run four microphones here.
Yeah.
Well, let's move a little forward. So you graduate from Newman, I assume.
Yep.
After all that money was spent.
Barely.
Better graduate, fucker.
Barely did it.
So then you go to college.
LSU. Yeah.
Playing there.
Barely got into LSU.
Okay, you're playing there in Baton Rouge, playing in bands
playing
there.
In cover bands up there. And, you know, was there for 4.5 years, graduated, and the guys I was in a cover band with there, I was, you know, I said, God, we should start an original band, guys. I feel like, you know, we could do it. And I wanted to do kind of like a rock thing, and they wanted to do instrumental prog music.
Oh, God.
Which is not anything that I have any interest in ever doing.
Sure. Prog?
Instrumental prog music.
What is that?
Odd time signatures, like Rush. But even
God.
Like darker than Rush, like Dream
Rush
Theater,
is one of the worst bands shit like that. I've ever heard
so they hate money and pussy. I'm guessing.
Bingo.
Yeah.
So,
God.
So I moved back to New Orleans.
Good.
Pretty much right after I graduated, and this will date it. I met a dude on MySpace who was at Tulane, and he was a songwriter. And we got together and started writing songs and started a band called The Garden District.
Okay.
And we were not very good in hindsight. At the time,
well,
I thought we were
what is MySpace?
Cool.
I don't know what that is.
It was a social media platform.
Oh.
Actually, Manny, I met you having...
Oh.
I was having coffee with this guy one time outside of Rue de la Course.
Oh.
And I think you were campaigning.
Oh.
And you came up and introduced yourself.
And
your name struck me.
Oh, and what year was this?
Well, this is going to be 05?
Yeah, probably.
Second run.
Yeah, second time around. Yeah.
I think I even had a bumper sticker.
It was right after Katrina.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those were good times.
Yeah, man. Those bygone days.
Yeah.
Right, Katrina.
Right, way back there. So you're playing in the Garden District. Is that how you wind up meeting Fred LeBlanc? Is that your entree into Cowboy Mouth?
You know, as 90s kids, I think them and Better Than Ezra were like on everybody's kind of radar for people my age. And just through going to shows, I somehow ended up talking to Fred one day and we exchanged email addresses. And then as we just started emailing, we found out we had a lot of the same musical tastes. He's a big Beatles nerd too.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started this band and he said, look, I want to get into production. You want to make a demo together. So we went over and recorded with him and did some tracks. And after a while, it was kind of like we could tell that I could tell that this band wasn't going to be my path forward. And Fred and I had gotten to be, you know, pretty good friends at the time. And I think Paul was toying with the idea of leaving. And Fred was toying with the idea of maybe doing his own thing if he didn't leave. And he said, well, would you be ever interested in playing guitar with me? I said, sure, why not? And then one day, I think this was summer of 06, he called and he said, man, I don't know what to do. Paul just quit. I need a guitar player. And then I said, well, shit, I don't know anybody, man. Like, let me ask around. I can't think of anybody off the top of my head.
You.
And it just went over my head. And I was driving on the interstate with my wife, and I hung up, and she was like, what happened? I said, well, Paul just quit Cowboy Mouth, and Fred's looking for a guitar player. I don't know who I could recommend. She was like, I think he meant you, dummy.
Yeah.
So I called him back, and I said, hey, you know, I'd be interested. He goes, dude, I just got off the phone with Vance DeGeneres. He's going to do it.
Okay.
I mean, it was a matter of 10 minutes. And he'd known Vance from, you know, Backbeats days and doing the cold and all
cold,
that.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law was in the Backbeats.
Oh, shit. Who's your brother-in-law?
John Herbert.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Nice. It's a small world.
He's in jail right now.
It's no good.
Yeah, he's in Bridge City.
Okay.
That's jail.
Yeah.
No, seems like a sentence. Prison
right,
sentence.
Yeah.
But it's really just Bridge
Valid.
City. Yeah.
Fair enough.
His house.
He lives right next door to the juvenile prison.
Okay, so he's close.
So he houses kids.
Jail adjacent.
Yeah. Foster kids.
Yeah.
He's a foster parent.
Okay. He's got a big heart.
Yeah. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
So Vance winds up playing guitar, but he doesn't play guitar in that band for too long.
No, he's only there for, it was, I think, under a year. And he took off for 2 weeks right before Mardi Gras 07 because Ellen was going to host the Oscars and she wanted him to go write with him for that.
Uh-huh.
So he took 2 weeks off. I got asked to go fill in for 2 weeks. So I went and filled in and it was more or less kind of an audition. I don't think Vance was ever going to stay full time. And so finished that tour and then in like June or July of 07, he called and said, hey, Vance is going to leave in August. Would you like to take his spot? So I said, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're out of school. You didn't have a day job.
I did, actually. I worked for a family business on my mom's side.
Oh, okay.
It was a business that my great-grandfather started. It was a building materials distribution company selling roofing and siding. Which
LAS? Fight the Uglies?
It was called, same thing. It was called Crescent Materials.
Crescent Materials.
And it had been presented as, you know, my legacy for my whole life. One day you could run this, and I had no desire to run that one day. But after Katrina, business was booming, and they needed people. So I ended up out there. And, you know, and in hindsight, like, it paid well. I could have driven that as a career. I just had no interest in doing it. And family businesses are so uncomfortable anyway.
Because it's family.
Yeah, you know, and like my grandfather and my great uncle like split the ownership at some point. So then like my mom's cousin was the president at one point and my dad was the vice president. But then another uncle was like the treasurer. And there was always drama. And factionalized. It's like, this all sucks,
it's
man.
It's like the Brennan
family.
Yeah. Right.
So it was funny. When I got the call, my dad was out on vacation. And so I was like, well, I can't tell him I'm quitting for like 2 weeks. I got to just keep this to myself. And he was cool about it. He understood, which was interesting because I say that, but he had never been super supportive of the idea of music as a career. So when I told him I was leaving, I was like, I had to say, like, I'm going to be put on a salary. I'll have a retainer. Like, I'll have health insurance. And he didn't believe it. Like, he just thought it was...
Oh, with cowboy mouth?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Like, he just thought I was going to just be in a van, you know, slugging it out.
Right.
And it wasn't until, like, months later was like, just my health insurance card. Like, you're on the guest list for the House of Blues. Like, it's a sold out show. And he like saw the thing and he was like, oh shit, you actually can make a living playing music.
Okay.
So that kind of changed his tone on that a little bit.
Nice.
But yeah, so that's
so how come you can't get health insurance through music, your band? He's getting health insurance.
You got to get that 90s hit money.
Yeah. You know, none of the bands I play in have that kind of infrastructure in place.
Oh.
It's all very ad hoc out there.
This was also very much like the end of those kind of days for them.
Right.
Like when I left in 2010, and I think like a year later they'd like gotten rid of their tour bus and they were in a van, and a couple years later they didn't have a crew, and the guitar player that replaced me was the tour manager and stage manager.
Now the Iguanas had record company money and all that stuff flowing early on at probably the same time, I mean before that period, but through then. But I was always very resistant when managers would start talking about, oh, we're going to put this money to the side and we'll do this. And then and I was like, I could feel my scalp getting hot,
right.
You know,
because
to me, that's just that's a way that they're going to steal money from you.
Yeah,
and my thought was, let's keep this as lean as possible and put all the money in our pockets.
Yeah,
because I went on a summer tour where we had a tour bus and I was collecting all the cash fees and they were quite high.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the summer, we had a huge pile of cash that I invited everybody to the back of the van, the back of the bus, and said, okay, this is all the money we made. This is the pile that's going to the bus company. This is the pile that's going to the driver. This is the pile that's going to the tour manager. This is going to the sound
man.
Credit
card.
And then
the
smaller pile we're going to split between us of the actual stakeholders in this thing. Now, back
to you.
That's
a heartbreaking moment.
But that was the last time we did that.
Yeah.
Next time we're back in the van and still collecting even bigger fees. But that's why we all have houses.
Right, exactly.
Oh, geez. We're running long.
Oh.
We should take a break now,
okay.
Manny.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
There's a certain something in the way you looked at me and said you'd stay there. Let me know that I was out of line. But I didn't know what else to do, and like a fool I tested you by demanding things of you which were of mine. And now I feel like such a fool. Separate ways. I know the lesson I learned here is worth it all.
But you did it with such love that you're standing far above me and all I did to you. I'm sorry now, what can I do?
Yeah.
And we're back.
Yeah.
Back with Mr. Manny Chevrolet.
That's me.
I am Renee Coleman.
You are.
Back with our guest, Mr. Jonathan Paredes.
Yes.
Paredes, and that's German-Irish, right? We discovered that, right?
Spanish-German.
Spanish-German.
Maybe some Irish.
Now, what's the difference?
Now,
Scotch-Irish on my mother's side.
Oh.
There you go.
So, what's a Scotch egg?
So,
it's like black a, egg, isn't it, or something like that?
No, Scotch egg is like, it's like a battered and fried egg. They're very good.
Sounds good to me.
Now, this week, Manny, we've received more mail at the bar.
Oh, hate mail.
It could be, you know. I opened it up, but I'm now going to take the contents out. Hopefully, it's not going to be more anthrax, but who knows?
Oh, no. What is it?
So it's, it says a note in here. It says, Renee and Manny, best podcast around.
Oh.
Okay. Have a couple of cocktails on me, Charlie.
Oh.
A not so crisp $20 bill, but thank you very much, Charlie. Shout out to Charlie.
Well done, Charlie.
Buying a round of drinks, buying the drinks
He
tonight.
Didn't give his last name, or we're not going
to
say it?
Did not give his last name at all. No, he must not want us to say it.
He's from North Vietnam, I guess, right?
Could be.
Charlie.
Yeah.
All right.
Charlie don't surf.
Yeah.
but he does.
He's that guy who said, fuck you, G.I. Long bridge for hours on end.
Right.
Fuck you, G.I. Charlie's close. A good guy.
He's close.
Though.
He's real close.
Yeah, he's real close.
He's real close.
Motherfucker.
You know, if you want to follow Charlie's lead, you know, you can send mail to the bar here at Snake and Jake's.
What is, does he have a return address or a zip code?
He does. It's Tucson, Arizona. It's not
I
a local.
I spent a weekend 1 month there in Tucson.
I've been to Tucson a number of times. They have that hotel that has the gig down in the lounge, and then right across the street is the theater.
I did a gig with there's a theater in the round. I think that's in Phoenix.
There's a theater
in the round where I opened for Howie Mandel.
Howie Mandel.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's nuts.
Yes, he is a nut.
He's a germaphobe. You know.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, so you can send it to Snake and Jake's 7612 Oak
Street. Thank you, Charlie.
But usually people just use the Venmo and PayPal links that we have in the show notes of every show or in the Facebook posts about the show. And also we have a Patreon link right there. We have a handful of patrons that support us week in, week out. I know your podcast probably has a lot of corporate sponsorship.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, we don't have the popular... The popular MeUndies. Yeah. We don't have the popular draw of the Beatles, right. You know. We're just going on the strength of our personalities, right, I mean, which are, you know, middling at best.
There's a market for everything, man. Don't sell yourself short.
Apparently so. So yes, we have the Patreon link right there in the notes. Also, we have Troubled Men Podcast T-shirts. They have the link right there in the notes as well. And also, I always say, follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you're listening to it. Give us 5 stars. Helps us a lot. Costs you nothing. Also, let's see. I want to give a shout out to Chafalaya Restaurant. Had a wonderful meal there. Thanks to our former guest, Tony Toko. Shout out to Tony Toko. Thank you. It was a wonderful time over there. Everybody go out and support your local New Orleans restaurants, especially during the summer. It's a very slow time, but the food's just as good in the summertime as it is all the rest of the time. You know, you can find all my dates. The Iguanas will continue on our residency there at the Carousel Bar every Sunday, 7 to 10 at the Hotel Montleon right there, beautiful French Quarter. And I'll be out with Sonny Landreth for this week and then the last week in July. So look for me out there. I think I'm going to be somewhere in the Northeast that last week in July. All right, enough of that. Back to our guest, the great Mr. Jonathan Paredes. Now, Jonathan, we're talking about your joining Cowboy Mouth, and we're going to move a little bit faster at this point, but you're out there for 3 years with Cowboy Mouth. Mm-hmm. That's a hard touring band. It's a lot of Fred. Mm-hmm. You know, the shows are sort of a cross between like a pep rally and a Nuremberg rally.
Valid. Valid.
But you would know that better than
me. That's on point, man. Okay. That's on point.
Okay. But people,
a lot of goose stepping.
People seem to love it. You know, people show up.
Yes, they
do. It's a band that's still going strong. You played with it for 3 years. I'm imagining that after 3 years of that, you thought, this is a lot of touring. I'm ready to move on.
Yeah, we were doing like, I want to say we were gone for like 225, 240 days a year, something like that.
Now, I don't know who, what's the big hit? Why are they touring so much? You must have a hit.
They had a hit in the late 90s called Jenny Says.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't know what that is.
And so that was in like 97, 98, and then I joined in 2007.
Still
so it was
touring on that hit.
Yes, yes.
Well, yeah, they're doing cruise ships now, or, you know.
I mean, they do everything. Everything.
They do everything?
Yeah.
Oh,
and, but yeah, after, you know, after 3 years, you know, one of the things was I was going, well, you know, these guys are 20 something years older than me. What happens in 20 years if somebody drops dead from a heart attack? Then I'm out of a job. And
you're already looking 20 years down the road.
Well, I'm trying to and I was also watching, like, we were just repeating the same 6 month tour cycle for 3 years,
right,
to diminishing numbers. And there was no talk of how do we grow. And I also wanted to start.
So you're not writing more songs.
I didn't write anything with that band. My contributions were not welcome or encouraged. So, but I was also writing songs at the time and wanting to do something with them. So after 3 years, I just kind of had my fill and came back and started the Breton Sound at that point.
The Breton Sound.
Yes.
So the Breton Sound, that was like your bread and butter. It's you had all original material.
Mm, yeah.
You guys are, you know, making records, pitching them to labels and management.
Trying to do the thing, yeah.
Right.
We were touring as much as we could and we only made EPs because it was all we could really ever afford.
Mm-hmm. That's enough for somebody to figure out whether they want to sign you or not.
Now, an EP is like basically
four songs.
Four songs. Like,
yeah,
yeah,
three, four, five.
Extended play.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
And so we did four of those in our 10 or so years. And we tried to do the thing and tried to make it a career. And the music industry, you know, for like pop rock music, whatever, it was just changing so much. And there's so much now that you have to do that stuff where it's like you spend more time creating content than like writing and making music. And I had no interest in doing that.
You mean like social media content?
Yeah, uh-huh. Like having to make videos and all that shit.
Pay to play, that was a big thing.
That's still a thing.
Yeah, pay to play.
And you know, if I had the money to pay, I would have. But you know, there was so much around it where I just, after 10 years, we felt like we were just kind of beating our head against the wall. Uh-huh. And right before COVID hit, I kind of got to that point of like, you know, going, guys, I'm really burning out here. And I don't know that I want to do this anymore, but I still want to keep playing with you guys. Where do all of our kind of paths connect? And they all connect in the 90s. We all love the same 90s music. And so had the idea of what if we just pivoted to a 90s cover band?
Okay.
So we can all still keep hanging out, keep working together.
Right.
Because we know, like, we work together well.
Mm-hmm.
It's silly to throw that away.
And you have that sound already.
Yeah. Well, and the joke was, you know, when we finally got a manager.
And that was the Hanson Brothers.
Yes, the Hanson Brothers. Yes.
Okay.
And once we, you know, we had a manager out of L.A. who was shopping us around to labels.
Was his name Lindy?
His name was not Lindy. It was John.
All right.
And he would come back and say, you know, they said they loved it, but you guys would have been big in the 90s. And we just kept hearing that same fucking feedback. And one day it was like a ton of bricks. I was like, that's the name of a 90s cover band.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck. Okay. So when I called the guys, I was like, hey, I have an idea. And I pitched it. They all were like, that's too good to pass up. Yeah,
yeah, right,
let's
fucking do it. There you go. Excellent. So,
and talk about, you know, kismet, or, you know, like things that are working out with the trend.
Yeah.
When I go out and play with bands on the road, half of the bands that are on, you know, you look and see who's been here, who's coming here, what are the posters on the wall.
Yeah.
Half of the groups are tribute acts and
90s bands that are having a resurgence, yeah.
Right, but I mean, like a lot of stuff, you know, cover acts, but yeah. Guys doing it very well, So, you know, that has, like, even locally you know, Rock and Bowl, half the stuff that gets booked there is not...
Because nobody wants to play there.
It's not clubs, it's not clubs booking people playing original music.
Yeah,
it's,
yeah.
Because maybe, I don't know, tastes change, times change, people change, as...
It's tough, I mean...
People are, they don't have the patience, they don't have the
well, they don't have to go out to find new music. They just find it on their phone, on TikTok or on Instagram. Like,
right.
You don't have to go see a band.
Yeah,
to
I don't like seeing live music. It's
no?
very loud
it
and it's just annoying to me.
Yeah. I feel that. Yeah,
but
yeah.
But you guys are killing it as and you have Kyle Maloss on now in the band, former guest of ours.
Yeah, Kyle joined. So our drummer in the Breton Sound early in COVID moved to St. Louis. And it was right before COVID. So Kyle, we asked Kyle to join and we did like one show. We did like a private, like a birthday party with Kyle. And then COVID happened. So we did nothing for like a year.
Was
year
there
and a half.
Pinata at this birthday?
There was, in fact, a pinata at that birthday.
I knew it.
There was a pinata.
Wow, man.
Nailed it.
Psychic.
I've known Kyle for years. I met him through Fred, who he loves to rub in the fact that I met him for the first time at Jazz Fest. Fred was like, Kyle, you got to meet my buddy Jonathan. You guys are going to get along so well. You're both Beatles nerds, total music nerds. You're going to love each other. And I kind of like blew him off. Uh-huh. But in defense, I was like having a really shitty day because the band's manager at the time was there and he and I didn't get along. So I just left like an argument with him.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm trying to like be introduced to this guy and I just didn't have the fucking capacity.
Jazz Fest.
So I was like, hey, man, nice
degrees.
To meet you. And I split.
Right.
So he loves to rub that in my face and I big timed him the first time I met him.
Oh, okay.
It was not intentional though.
Sure. You know, he could take it.
He's been around.
He's got a good sense of humor. Yeah absolutely. But a few years before that, you had already started The Walrus, right?
Kind of, yeah. So The Walrus came about in, this was 2014, I think. Paul McCartney had a show scheduled here, and he canceled it because he had gotten sick. And so all these people in town, all these musicians in town had tickets for the show, and then a week out had no show to go to and had no gigs. So I think it was either Davis Rogan or Paul Sanchez was like, let's do a tribute thing. And so Paul knew that I was a big Beatles nerd, so he called me, asked if I would come do some songs. And so I went, and Andre Boren and Dave Pomerleau from Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, who were also in The Walrus, and Felix Woleib, the guitar player, were like part of the house band. And we kind of all just quickly connected and realized we were all kind of equal nerds on that kind of thing. And so that show went really well. And then we did another one 6 or 7 months later. We did like a George Harrison tribute. And after that, they just were like, hey, we do this thing every now and then called The Walrus. Would you ever be interested in playing? And I said, sure. And so must have been like a year later. They're like, hey, we got booked to play the opening of some hotel down in the CBD. You want to come play? And we did one rehearsal and went and played, and it was really good. Like, everyone just did their homework.
Right.
And so for the next 5 years, it was 2 to 3 gigs a year at like a private event or a corporate thing. And maybe we'd rehearse. Maybe we wouldn't.
Okay.
Just do your homework and show up and know your shit.
Right.
And so that kind of went on for a while. And then when COVID happened, everybody in Johnny Sketch, I think, was kind of scattered around the country. The Breton Sound had just stopped. The big in the 90s had kind of paused when COVID hit. And so The Walrus got asked to do a porch show in like June of 2020. And
pork show?
A porch show.
Oh,
on a porch.
Oh,
yeah.
On a porch.
And
now, was that across from what's now Marcellus Harmony Park on Sycamore Street? Because I saw that show.
I was at that show. Yes, that was.
I live on Sycamore Street.
Funny. Yeah. Yeah, that was one of the first ones. And from there, it just kind of snowballed. And then people would say, hey, can you come play my porch? Because everyone wanted to see music or have interaction.
Yeah.
And you could do it outside and be, you know, socially distant and everybody could stay safe. And so that kind of became the thing. And we went from doing 2 to 3 shows a year to doing like 4 to 5 shows a month. All of them outdoor porch concerts.
Mm-hmm.
We became very self-sufficient. Like, we bought our own PA and could set up our own thing and just kind of do it. And it just kind of snowballed from there.
So which Beatle are you?
So we kind of are all an amalgamous Beatle. Like, no one is like a specific.
So there's more than four guys in the band?
No, it's just only four of us. But it's not like Beatlemania where
each person no one dresses up, you know, like
a certain Beatle.
I play the John Lennon guitar parts, but I tend to sing more of the Paul McCartney vocal parts.
Okay.
And then like our drummer is also a classically trained pianist. So he plays drums and keys.
Okay.
Sometimes at the same time.
Yeah, pretty
crazy. So we switch up different things. It's basically whoever would do the job the best. Who's going to sing it best? You sing it then. That's fine.
I got you.
Yeah.
You're not a phony Beatlemania thing.
No. Phony Beatlemania is not bitten the task here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
no wigs. No
right.
Fake beards.
None of that shit.
Yeah.
But you do sometimes have the matching suits. We
got the Shea Stadium jacket.
Okay, that's what it is.
One single item.
The tan Nehru jacket.
Yes, it lets us kind of step up the production value for the kind of nicer shows.
Now, recently, I know at the new WWOZ studios, they have that beautiful outdoor rooftop kind of thing. It overlooks the French Quarter and the river. And when I was out there the first time, Beth Arroyo Utterback, the director there, was saying, "Oh, this would be so great to have like the Beatles rooftop concert." And we really would like to do that. Now, I know a month after that, they did have you guys out there and you kind of recreated that moment.
Which was really fun because we had talked about wanting to do something like that for a long time. Because I think, what was it? In 2020 was the anniversary. No, 2019 was the anniversary. And so 2024.
Anniversary of what?
Of the Beatles rooftop concert.
Oh,
yeah.
In 69.
Yes. So we had talked about doing it in 2024 because it would have been, the 55th or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not great at math.
Yeah,
and so
important.
We just couldn't get
our
together anywhere. They don't care.
No,
that's good.
They don't care.
So yeah, when they called and asked, we were ecstatic because we'd wanted to do it forever. And so we called up Josh Paxton to come be our Billy Preston.
Okay.
And then Ozzy wanted to bring a couple of guests on. So we brought in Alex McMurray and Susan Cowsill to kind of do guest vocals on stuff. And it was really, really fun. It was a beautiful, the weather was great. It sounded great up there. And, you know, when I got in the car, I was able to pull up the Ozzy app and hear it like almost immediately as soon as I got to the car.
Right.
And like, it sounded great.
Nice.
And we played really well, was really excited. And so, yeah, that was really fun. I was really glad we got to do that.
So did anyone hear it, though? You're
yeah.
On the
oh, yeah. Yeah,
so
it was on the radio.
It was on the radio,
I mean,
and they also streamed it on there.
Down on the street? Were there people
Some
on
people
the street?
Could, yeah, because there were videos of people that were down there that said that were listening that could hear it.
Okay.
So, and it was streamed on their Facebook page and on YouTube, and it had, like, 30,000 people watching or something. It was
nice.
Pretty cool, yeah.
And it's still archived there.
Yeah,
you
it's
can,
still there,
you can
yeah.
look that up. Now, more recently, you know, we've had Darren Hill from the Red Rockers on a couple of times in, you know, right before, right after they did these Red Rockers reunions at Tipitina's. And the first one was terrific. It was, you know, like a in-gathering of all the tribes, you know, all the old punk rockers were there. Now, and they did it was so successful, they did a second one.
Mm-hmm.
And on this one, they had you as a, like, utility guitar player, background vocalist, and you did a superb
Thanks,
job.
Man. Thank you.
Such great vocals, such great guitar playing. And we actually wound up coming over here after the gig to Snake and Jake's. We were having a little bit of fellowship here, and we were talking. I remember about you had a one of those Les Paul 3 humbucker, less Paul custom guitars.
Yeah, we're
talking about the mystery, the mystery of the middle pickup. Yeah. Like, what does it even do?
I still
do?
Can't tell you what it does. I don't think it does anything.
Now I can't. I remember that night we were talking about the SG model versus the regular traditional Les Paul single cutaway. Now, which one do you have? You have the SG model?
I've got the Les Paul.
You have the Les Paul. Cutaway. Okay. Yeah. Okay, right.
It's just the Les Paul custom 3 pickup.
Right, right. Now, I happen to see this Netflix thing, Becoming Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, I just watched that.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah, it's really, really good.
So good.
I was really bummed when it very ended. Disappointed with
Why?
That.
Why?
Were you?
Yeah, because I just thought I'd seen all this footage before. What's new?
Yeah.
And it just ended, okay.
It ends, yeah.
Yeah, first two albums. So they're going to make more?
I don't know.
I sure hope so.
And I knew all this stuff. You know, it was like, you're great in America. You haven't hit your own fucking country. And Peter Grant said, I knew all this stuff
right.
already.
Yeah, it's,
I thought it was one of the most boring. Me and my wife watched it, and we were bored the shit out of it because I knew all this stuff.
Okay, well.
It was horrible. I thought it was a horrible thing. The music's great. I love that.
I wouldn't say it was horrible.
I am saying it was horrible.
No, I'm saying that's pretty strong.
It was horrible.
Are you a big Led Zeppelin fan?
Oh, who
yeah, I grew up with Zeppelin and stuff. Yeah. To me, it was like nothing I knew. I already knew all this stuff.
See, I'm that way with like the last couple of Beatles documentaries that came out. Like there was the Beatles 64 one that came out.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, there's nothing new here. I've seen all this.
Like,
now, but I think the idea is just it's something for...
Becoming
it's
Zeppelin.
It's something for the new
generation.
Kids,
maybe my daughter will get into Zeppelin. Exactly.
They had some new interviews, you know, Jimmy Page and John Paul
Jones.
It was
Jones like an unheard Bonham interview.
Yeah. I just thought it was like, this is it?
Yeah.
That was it. I was
anyway, my wife and I were digging the shit out of it, watching it.
Because you were on heroin?
No, man.
Or you were sucking each other off, baby?
We were watching the television show.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why would that even come up?
Well, because that people, you know, get into things, you know. I got into Bold and the Beautiful the last few weeks because me and the wife were watching it, you know.
Okay.
You know, but no, I was very disappointed that Becoming Zeppelin was like, that's it?
Well, now you brought up the Beatles documentaries. Now, so you saw the one where they're doing the whatever that is right before, you know, building up to the...
Oh, the Get Back?
Yeah.
The eight-hour behemoth? Yeah. Yeah, I loved it.
You loved it, yes.
Loved it.
I loved it, too.
Could have gone for 14 more hours.
Right on. Now, Manny had a very interesting take on that.
Okay.
And you've seen it before, so you've watched, like, all the action.
Mm-hmm.
Watch it again and just watch Yoko.
Yeah.
Just watch her.
Okay.
Just every
Yeah, because
well, I'm curious. What's
to me,
take?
To me, everyone says she broke up the band, but I'm watching her and she's
not
like
doing anything.
She's not doing anything.
Exactly.
And
yes.
The one, you know, Linda McCartney,
she's
that
fucking
pig,
mail.
Is there constantly at
the
same time as Yoko. And the only one who's really not there is George's girl. What's her name?
Patty.
Yeah. She comes in and she's a hot fucking chick, man.
Mm, yeah.
And she, you know, she comes in, she says, hi, here's a cup of tea, I'll see you later. But Yoko's not doing anything
wrong. Yoko's like reading the mail.
Yeah.
Like doing the crossword puzzle.
And John is doing doses of dope.
Yeah.
You know, and they're both on fucking heroin and stuff like that. You could tell in that documentary, they're all high. It's fucking Paul and Linda who are the worst.
Yeah.
They're the worst.
They have what the kids call main character energy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
now, I seeing that particular documentary, I kind of finally got what the rest of the Beatles were irked about Paul for, which is that he's a much bigger dude.
Yeah.
And like
he just can't stop.
He walks into the room. He looks big. He's got a big coat on.
Mm-hmm.
He just sucks up all the air.
Well, and he's just music is just pouring out at that point. Like he's writing classic after classic.
Yeah,
and
he's
just,
not malicious. He's
no,
just
a
lot
stop.
Of Paul. Yeah.
And you know, I think you know, I'm sure he's got a massive ego, but he's churning out the goods and just can't be stopped. And what do you do at that point? Like, you can't not take over the room you're in.
You break up.
Yeah, you have to break up. Like, they have to.
And you're not going to fire him.
No, you're not kicking him out.
Yeah.
You're going to bring in, you know,
yeah, he
Jack
can fire
Bruce or somebody.
You.
Like, right, yeah. He could fire anybody.
The greatest part of that doc, and I watched, is when John Lennon is like tuning his guitar and he reaches into a pocket.
He pulls the bag out of his pocket.
He pulls out a bag of heroin. He goes,
yeah,
oh,
and he looks
wow.
back at the camera like, oh, shit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's also a great scene on the rooftop when the cops finally come up there. And Paul looks back and sees the cops and kind of gets Billy Preston's attention. And Billy turns around and sees him and does the kind of thing that you would do when you got caught looking at someone's paper, where you kind of go like, oh, never mind. And this is really like, oh, don't look at me kind of move. It's really funny. Yeah, I love that. I thought that was a great documentary.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that as well. I'll watch anything with even bands I don't like. Anything, because I'm so fascinated by band dynamics.
Yes, exactly.
And like, because it's so familiar to me, but it's endlessly fascinating.
Yes, because you want to see like how everyone else, it's the same conversations that you have with other musicians, because you want to know what their shit's like.
Yeah, but don't you think, like, going back to that Zeppelin documentary, you're seeing all this footage from the late 60s, early 70s, and then you're seeing the interviews from, like, a year ago or within the last year, and these guys' memories don't fucking know what happened then.
Yeah.
You know, and they're just coming up with something. So it's bullshit.
For sure.
It's all bullshit.
Yeah. Well, that's why I think, like, the Bonham one is cool, because that's in real time.
John Bonham documentary?
No, there's an interview with him in that documentary.
Oh,
that's an unheard interview.
Yeah, because he's dead.
Yeah, because he's dead. But that's real-time recollection, which you don't get when you hear the interview 40 years later.
2025, it's like, these guys can't remember. Jimmy Page doesn't remember.
Well, it's like even the Beatles ones, like Paul and Ringo tell the same stories all the time.
Right, sure.
And the stories are 9 times out of 10, factually wrong, and like easily
they've just
provable.
Told them so many times.
That's just what
that's
they
what
know
they,
the story.
Think the story
and
is
the
right.
oatmeal starts coming out of the mouth and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff. I love
oatmeal. Runs down the face.
I love oatmeal.
Well, so that brings us up to 2020, and. Yeah, we're all, you know, you have the walrus isn't quite moving yet. We're all sitting at home.
Right.
And you come up with this idea, ranking the Beatles. Yeah. Tell us about that.
That started really out of sheer boredom in like March or April of 2020. So like fresh COVID, and just, you know, had the idea of like, I wonder if I could put the entire catalog of the band in order of least favorite to most favorite. And I sat in my kitchen for 2 or 3 days just drinking wine and doing fuck all else, and made a spreadsheet and color-coded it, because I'm kind of a nerd about that kind of shit.
Okay.
So I color-coded it and just sat there and just listened to songs and A-B'd shit back and forth, and then eventually came up with this list. So my idea initially was I was just going to share every day a post on Facebook just to have communication with people, because you weren't seeing anybody, you know?
Right.
And so I was posting things on Facebook every day of, you know, here's 223, here's, you know, the 222, and just to have conversation.
And this is from least favorite to most favorite?
Least favorite to most favorite. Okay. So I started with...
album or song?
Songs.
So what was your least favorite
song? Least favorite, I started with the German version of I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Okay.
Followed by the German version of She Loves You.
Sure.
And then you get to Mr. Moonlight.
Okay.
Off the Beatles For Sale album, and then it kind of goes from there.
Uh-huh. What about number 9?
I actually really like Revolution number 9.
Really?
I have that
top 10?
It's not top 10. Okay. It's close to the hundreds, close to 100.
Okay. How many Beatles songs are there?
So I've got 223 my official count, and that includes all the catalog albums, singles and B-sides, and then stuff that they released on like their anthology that had been like prepared for release but then shelved.
Are there any live tracks?
No live tracks on this list.
Oh.
No. Yeah.
Oh,
but
shame.
So I was doing these Facebook posts, and then after about a month, 3 or 4 people said, you know, this could be a podcast. And Alex Rawls kind of pushed it and was like, this is really a smart idea. You should do it.
Okay.
And so I initially was kind of hesitant, but then eventually got into the idea, and I was going to just do it by myself, and I recorded like an intro, and it took me like 5 hours to try to record this monologue of what I was going to do and why. And then Alex texted, you need a co-host who's not a Beatles fan, like not a hardcore Beatles fan. And so it was the night I was recording this intro thing, and I went and sat on the couch and I was talking to my wife, and I was like, well, you know, Alex said it'd be smart to have somebody else who's not a hardcore Beatles fan, but I don't know who to get because we
You got Biggie Smalls.
I get Biggie Smalls. I don't think he liked the Beatles. But my wife goes, well, I got nothing to do. I'll do it.
Oh, okay.
And so I was
she doesn't like the Beatles?
She does. She's just like, she's
not a devotee.
She's not a hardcore fan about it. She's just kind of like, yeah, it's fine. She's more level-headed. Like, she'll tell me, like, no, Revolution 9 is actually garbage, and you're being an idiot about this.
Yeah, ranking it 99.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that.
So, yeah.
So you guys got kids?
No, just dogs. No kids. No.
We have a podcast.
We have a podcast, yeah. So, yeah, so I started it the summer of 2020, and it was interesting because at first I was... You know, I called a lot of musicians that I knew and people I could get on Zoom or get in the backyard. Mm-hmm. But then I started just kind of DMing musicians that I was a fan of on different social media platforms that I thought they might be a fan of the Beatles. And nobody was doing anything. So they were like, sure, stranger, I'll talk about the Beatles for an hour and a half with you.
Right.
Fuck yeah. So, like, I got Kyle Gass from Tenacious D.
Right, cool. Because
he posted a video playing Blackbird or something. He's a great finger picker.
Yeah.
And so I just DM'd him. I was like, hey, I have this podcast. I think you're a Beatles
fan. Oh, he's Jack
Black's partner. I was like, if you ever want to come do this podcast, love to have you. And he was like, sure, let's talk about it. So we DM'd a few times and got him. I got the guitar player from Death Cab for Cutie. And just, like, people had nothing to do, so they were into the idea.
Right.
So it kind of just took it to another place. Now, you know, 4 years later, everyone's back to work, so those people don't respond anymore, which is fine, because it also lets me get to a more like level place with the show and kind of be more realistic, I think.
Now, and this is a great idea. If any people out there that have wanted to be on the Troubled Men podcast and you're possibly resentful that we haven't had you on the show yet, Jonathan has a great approach. Start your own podcast and don't invite me and Manny on as guests. And that will be your revenge.
That's how you do it. That's the move. So, do you want to come on?
Do
you have the time?
I'm not saying that to try.
What kind of Beatles fan are you? A hardcore Beatles fan?
I mean, I like the Beatles, but I'm someone who has preserved his innocence.
Sure.
And so I have friends like my wife. Do you know Jack White?
Mm-hmm.
When he can play Name That Tune with the Beatles records
in like a second. Yeah.
So he knows that the catalog so well, he can recognize the air on the recording before they play a note. The thing starts and
you just know that sound that hits.
Yeah. That's how fucking. So I'm not like that at all.
Is your wife like that?
She knows much more than me.
Okay.
She's pretty close.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I hate music, so I'll never be on it.
Fair enough.
You could have me and my wife on together.
I find that dynamic really interesting. Like, I think that would be cool.
Now, I love I have plenty of stuff I love about the Beatles, but again, it's,
But I do listen every Sunday morning. I do listen
Breakfast with the Beatles.
Beatles on WTIX.
If I get up.
If you're up that early.
Yeah, if I'm up that early.
Which
I usually am because I wake up screaming every morning.
It is the time to wake up screaming every morning. We're there as a society.
Yes.
But see, what I don't like about that show is that they'll play like... solo stuff by the Beatles.
Yeah, you don't like the solo stuff?
Some of Paul McCartney's solo stuff is like great. Some of it's awful.
Sure.
Like Harrison.
Yeah.
And
they've
Ringo.
All got real peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. Are we done?
Well, we're kind of on the downslope of the podcast here. Manny's ready. One more thing I wanted to ask you about your opinion, the Giles Martin remixes of the Beatles records.
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Who's Giles Martin?
Giles Martin is the son of George Martin, their producer.
Oh.
He's also a producer in his own right.
He's a terrific producer.
So they've kind of handed him the keys to the kingdom to update and remix the catalog as it goes on.
Well, why would they do that?
Because they want to remix things to sound good on modern stereos and on phones.
And they don't have any
phones
relevant. Well, that's what kids listen to music
on. And they don't have any new Beatles music coming out. So if they can,
well, we had the last one two years ago.
But if they can repackage it.
So basically, they've given this kid a career. The Beatles have given this kid a career.
I mean, he had one. He'd already kind of earned his stripes.
Very talented guy.
He's very good at what he does. Yes. But they've given him, like, he's their guy, you know?
Well, George Martin's dead.
And
his son took over.
He had lost his hearing years before he died, so he brought his son in and kind of.
What?
He brought his son in and kind of taught him what he knew. So he's kind of the heir to that throne.
Yes.
But with those remixes, I'm fine with them. You know, some of them are very different, which I think is okay.
They're interesting to hear.
Yeah.
It's not the original.
It's not
document.
The original, but what I love is they're not withdrawing the original. The originals are still there.
Sure.
You can hear them all. It's just a new perspective.
It's another take on it.
I'm fine with it. You know, like, whatever, if it keeps the band in the zeitgeist and helps maintain that generational rollover popularity.
Well, why wouldn't the band be in the zeitgeist? They're going to live forever.
Yeah.
Just
but
like
I mean,
Oasis,
you know,
new generation.
So, you say just like Oasis?
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
Manny.
Yeah, forever.
But like, you know, there was a period, I think, in the 70s and 80s where the Beatles were not super cool. Like being a Beatles fan was not considered like cool or they were very irrelevant. You know, and it took
because it was a different culture.
Yeah, it was a different culture, and you know, and to bring it back.
And there was a time when Elvis wasn't relevant.
For sure, for sure.
And then he became relevant.
For sure.
You know, and there's going to be a time where you're not going to be relevant.
I'm not. Now is the time.
Right. Now is the time.
Now is the time.
So who cares? Right. Basically,
who cares? We're all worm food at some point.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Yeah,
man.
It's been really
wonderful.
It's been fun, man. Appreciate it.
Are you driving home?
Yes.
Oh, good luck with that.
Thank you.
Right.
Good
luck to
this
you,
this is the one
Manny.
That has more of the more of the soda in it.
Okay.
So,
well,
I'm good.
Let me be the first one to say it's been nice knowing you. Okay.
Right, nice knowing both of y'all.
If I'm alive for the election, you got my vote.
Okay, yeah.
Yes. Everybody vote for Manny. And as always on the Troubled Men podcast, we like to say trouble never ends.
But you know what? The struggle continues. Good night.
Good night.